First of all, I want to tell you that the opinions discussed here are that of the speakers and not necessarily represents the opinions of Cocaine Anonymous as a whole. And that being said, I'd like our panel to introduce themselves.
Jill, drug alcoholic.
Jill.
Pete, addict alcoholic.
And Pete.
Rick, addict alcoholic.
Rick, Mike, drug addict and alcoholic.
And Mike.
Howdy. Diane, addict alcoholic.
Hi, Diane. Wonderful. This is a principal's workshop, and this was adapted. This was not all my work here. It was adapted from a workshop, a principal's workshop that I went to in Vegas at this last World Convention. It was great. Unfortunately, it was a women's principal's workshop, so it wasn't taped. So I was disappointed on that. So I thought when I got asked to do the principals that we would try and copy as much as we could. I cut out some of the stuff because it was not approved literature. So we're going to get started. A principle. It's a noun, a fundamental truth or proposition that serves as a foundation for a system of belief or behavior or for a chain of reasoning. A virtue is a noun, a moral excellence, goodness, righteousness, a good or admirable quality or property, conformity of one's life and conduct to moral. Ethical principles, uprightness, and rectitude. Rectitude. I think it's rectitude, yeah. So it should be quite easy to work out the answers to what does it mean to practice these principles in all of our affairs when it says it in the big book on page 60. We are dealing with general principles common to most denominations. That's mentioned on page 94 in the big book. So what are these? Okay. Number three, you had better use everyday language when describing spiritual principles, page 93 in the big book. Well, how do we do that, right? And then my friend emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all of my affairs, page 14, the big book. Which principles? And there's 33 other mentions of the principles in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? So the 12 steps are the principles of the program that we practice, as listed in the big book, pages 59 and 60. Over the years, many lists of virtues that correspond to each of the 12 steps and their underlying spiritual nature have been printed in newsletters and on pamphlets. The origins of these lists are unknown, although they are used by many 12-step members. And these are the principles and the virtues. And this comes from the CA pamphlet, which is a handout that you guys, most of you got, I think, and there's still a few up here. So step one is honesty. Step two, hope. Step three, faith. Step four, courage. Step five, integrity. Step six, willingness. Step seven, humility. Step eight, love. Step nine, forgiveness. Step 10, discipline. Step 11, spiritual awareness. Step 12, service. There are other spiritual principles in our fellowship, such as the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts. However, today, and each of them has their own associated virtue, but today we're just concentrating on the 12 steps and their virtues. So to get us started, Diane is the one who wrote and is going to talk on principle one. So I'll turn it over to Diane.
Hello everyone, my name again is Diane. I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Hi Diane.
Principle one, from step one, we admitted we were powerless over cocaine and all other mind-altering substances, and that our lives had become unmanageable. The virtue, honesty. Definition, the quality of being honest. Honest meaning free of deceit, truthful, and sincere. I used a reference, again, there's many references to look up different words in the literature, and the reference that I used had numerous pages, but I certainly, from a personal experience of having read through the first 164 pages and having worked the steps, the principle of honesty comes up many times, even more than these pages listed. If it's talking about these virtues of being free of deceit, truthful, and sincere. But starting on page 58, a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty is certainly what the crux of the program is about. Page 64, we took stock honestly. We searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused failure. Page 67. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Page 70. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. Page 72 to 73. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all of their story. Pages 82 to 83, perhaps there are cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Page 115, your desire to protect should not cause you to lie to people when they have the right to know where or what the other person is doing. We admitted we were powerless. Roman numeral page 28, not drinking to escape, drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. That admission that I needed to make when I first got here was my first piece of honesty. I had lived many years of denying that truth that I could not stop. I lived many years rationalizing and justifying. I can stop when I want to, or maybe it'll be different if. Those were all part of my dishonesty about my condition. Until I could finally admit that this was true about me, there was never going to be any hope for change. Page 11, admitted complete defeat. I finally had to recognize all of my attempts to have it turn out different, that I needed to put my hands up and say, I give. I needed to admit that. I needed to be honest that I did not have the answer. That was part of acknowledging my powerlessness. Page 23, the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no more idea why he took that first drink. In their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. I always heard that any day that ended in a Y, that really was about it. I started drinking because I liked the effect. From that first sip, I liked the effect. Whatever other drug came along, if I tried it and I liked the effect, it was on. And that the idea of trying to seek for, well, it's because so-and-so did this. You know, you drove me to drink. I wouldn't have to get up every morning and get high if only my husband loved me enough. You know, it helped me deal with situations. It helped me deal with my emotions to be able to not feel. And I always thought there must be a reason. And my first attempts at trying to change the consequences and take a look at this was seeking for what that reason was. Why am I the way I am? And the truth, strange to say, is I have no idea. Page 24, lost the power of choice in drink. We are without defense against the first drink. It took me a long time to recognize that not only did I not have control after I had a few in me to make that decision to just get home at a certain time, to be able to remember things, to not black out, to not be a puker, to not end up who knows where, that I had no control even once I made a decision to never pick up again, so many decisions, so many times, that I had no control over picking up that very first one. And that took me a long time to have that truth. Page 30, we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics, addicts. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. That delusional thinking was part of that dishonesty. And I wanted to believe that maybe one day, you know, that I can drink like a lady, even though that was never really my experience. I wanted to believe that it would turn out different this time, that I can control it. If only I do it like this or only do it like that. I had to concede to my innermost self that I had no clue. Page 39, alcoholic, we will absolutely will be unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. That too was a big hit. If surely in my treatment centers that I went to and I learned, got all this information about addiction, I got all this information about relapse prevention, I got all this information about staying away from certain people, certain places, that surely I'm armed now and I should be able to go out into the world and not pick up again because I really don't want to. And I've got this information and it makes sense. The honest truth was that wasn't enough to make me not pick up another drink or another drug. Page 43, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. No matter what made sense to me, no matter who I thought should help keep me clean, maybe I need to be locked up. You know, if only if I stay in that treatment center and stay it out the whole time, don't leave ahead of time, go into that halfway house, but none of that, in my experience, helped keep me clean. My defense had to come from a higher power. And that piece of honesty took a long time too. I thought I understood it, but I didn't know what it was like to be honest, to acknowledge that I was not reliant. I was very defiant, and that was dishonest. Page 45, our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed us utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Thank you.
Thanks, Diane. And then Rick will be going on to principle two.
Rick, addict, alcoholic.
Hey, Rick. Hey, Rick.
Principle two, step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Virtue, hope. Definition, noun, the feeling that what is wanted can be held, had, or the events will turn out for the best. And it's something I wrote long ago. Being at the second step of the program, I found myself for the first time in my new recovery life that I am not alone. I saw that there is help here in the rooms with other addicts like me who were here before me and who have found a solution. By attending CA meetings, I listened to their experiences, strength, and hope of others. I gradually started to believe that there is a way out from the life I've been living, that door that will lead me to the greater... A power greater than myself finally opens. Now, I just thought I would share my experience with the principle of hope in step two. And I can't share without thinking what that meant for me before I got here, which I really didn't have any hope. I don't know about any of you guys, but when I was using towards the end, when everything was starting to crash down in my life and I wanted a way out, but I was stuck. And the only people I had to share with were like bartenders, right? Where their solution was, here, have another drink. They didn't want to hear about it. Or in a dope house, they definitely didn't want to hear about anything about how to stop using. You know, it was all about where to get some, who to get some, and ways and means how to, you know, go about get that next one, right? No matter what we had to do. So when I started to share a little bit about the trouble I was, I needed to stop, they stopped me and said, oh, get out. They didn't want to hear it, you know. And it was a relief when I got to treatment and I came to CA that I found a room of people who was willing to listen. Not only listen that I needed help, they were willing to share their experience, the solution, the strength, the hope to me that there is a way out. That gave me hope right away, you know. I didn't know what this recovery was all going to be about, but I did know something. In these rooms, in these meetings, there was something special here. I knew that. I knew that going to meetings daily for me in the beginning helped me stay clean for that day. So there was. I didn't know about the rest of the steps or how long I was going to be here, but I knew coming was helping. And I didn't find you guys out in the dope house. You guys, if I did, you guys, like I said, would kick me out. But here you didn't. Here you're willing to share. And you're just like me, because I've heard many stories in these rooms. And you're just like me. I did that too. You know, we all had one day, right? So that's my experience with hope. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Rick.
And then Principal 3, Pete?
Pete, addict, alcoholic.
Hey, Pete.
Step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Virtue, faith. Definition, it's a noun. Confidence or trust in a person or thing. Faith in another's ability. Belief that is not based in proof. Belief in God or in the doctrines or teachings. Belief in anything as a code of ethics or standards of merit. And my little spiel in here was just a matter of willing to believe. Then that belief turns into faith. I trust that God will take care of me in every kind of way, not in just specific areas of my life, but my entire life. It means that whatever happens, if I turn it over to God, it's going to play out just the way it was intended to, not necessarily the way I wanted it to. That's having complete faith. And I think the hardest thing for me to do on a day-to-day basis is to get out of me, to get out of self, to run the show that I'm in control. That is very, very difficult and at times scary, but I have proof along the way that if I get out of the way, and I let God do what he's going to do in my life, and I leave the results up to him, or whatever you call your higher power, then that's okay. Just like Kelly talked about last night with her dad. I mean, she has complete faith in God that whatever's going to happen is going to happen, that God is going to take care of her, God is going to take care of her family. I'm going through something right now that's a little scary for me. I've been in my chosen profession for 29 years, in a specific area of that profession for 26 years, and for the first time ever, I don't know if I want to do it anymore. I'm seriously thinking about leaving it because I don't get that gratification anymore. And so before I make any moves or anything like this, I need to talk to God, I need to pray to God, I need to ask God to lead me in the right direction, and then leave the results to him. Now, God may want me in where I am still, and if that's what he wants, that's okay. But I have learned through the years that I do not have to meddle, because if I meddle and I push and I prod and I do things my way, they don't usually turn out well. I have proof that I have faith that God has removed that obsession from me. I have not had that obsession in over 14 years. To me, that's a miracle. That's gone. Not on anything that I've done, but because of God, and because I had faith that God is going to help me through that. And it has taken me a long time to get to that point in my, not just having faith, but I developed that faith by having a personal, intimate relationship with God. It's not just based on faith, but I have developed that relationship. Like Jimmy was talking out there, you know, sometimes I have to go outside of here to go out there to develop that faith. So that's what that means to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Pete.
Thanks, Pete.
And Michael Thanks, will do Pete. Principal 4.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike. I'm a drug addict and an alcoholic.
Hi.
Howdy. Courage. Do this first part first. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Virtue, courage. Definition, noun. The quality of mind or spirit that enables a person to face difficulty, danger, pain, etc., without fear or bravery. So before I go into mine, we're relating these back to the steps. And we just talked about steps and principles 1, 2, and 3. And the way I see 1, 2, and 3 is they work together as a system. Step 1 is...
You have to speak up, Michael.
Can you
step one is a statement of the problem, right? I am an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. Once I start, I can't stop. And because of that queer mental twist, if I do ever get stopped, I forget that I can't start this again, right? I forget what happened. So I keep starting over, right? So once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting. That means if I buy into that and I'm honest with myself, that I've got a death sentence, right? Step one is a death sentence. Step two is the solution to the problem, and it tells me that God is the cure for alcoholism. I wasn't happy to hear that. Like it says in our readings, you know, I didn't come to Cocaine Anonymous to find God. You know, I recoiled at that. What the heck is this about? But if you're honest and you buy into step one, then the only solution to keep you out of jail's insanity and death is acceptance of the solution, which is God. And step three for me is making the decision to adopt the solution instead of staying in the problem. So it means that I'm going to take and be on a God footing instead of a problem footing. So the next steps 4 through 9 then is, how do I go about doing that? And step 4 is inventory. And the principle there is echo. Okay, the principle there is courage. So like Diane, I went and did some research in our literature, and I came up with 3 paragraphs that I wanted to talk about. The first one is from the Big Book on page 68. And it says, "We never apologize to anyone for depending on our Creator. We laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear." And then from the 12 and 12, it says, "In times of emotional disturbance or indirection, we can pause and ask for quiet." And in the stillness, we simply say, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done." And I'm not going to read the other one. I want to stay on step 4 for a minute. So I think the reason why courage is the principle that relates to step 4 is it is very difficult to take and turn that eye that we look outward with inward and see ourselves. Look in the mirror and put down the things that are making us, you know, we're as sick as our secrets. And until we take and face those things and get those out, we have no hope of moving on with this program. You know, that's all I have. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you, Michael. And Principle 5 will go on to Jill.
Principle 5, step 5. Can you hear me? Okay, step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Virtue is integrity. Definition is a noun, adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, honesty, the state of being whole, entire, or undiminished, a sound, unimpaired, or perfect condition. So I did read out of the book, I just didn't quote anything in here, but I summed it up with, integrity is something that we gain by completing step 5. We put aside our ego and admitting our faults openly with another person. We free ourselves from the burdens of past deeds and get rid of shame. We become closer to Oh, typo. I told her to check that. Our higher power and have an opportunity to begin a new life guided by honesty and spiritual principles. So when it said integrity, so sometime between when I was born and when I started using, I was taught some principles and some moral lessons in life. And then during my using, I kind of pushed those aside, even though there may have been times during my using I thought, oh, I really shouldn't be doing this because whatever. And then at some point, I just didn't care. And then I came into recovery, and I had been doing the going against my moral character and my principles for so long that even when I tried to put those into practice in recovery, they seemed like a lie, and it was uncomfortable because I hadn't done them for so long. When I did my fourth step, I had a pretty good list of all the things I had gone against in my character, as well as obviously the other things I needed to make amends for, but a lot of that was based on who I had become in my character and the things I had done. By doing the fifth step, I was able to get rid of, like Mike said, that we're as sick as our secrets. Get rid of those secrets, clear my slate, and not have this burden of shame and guilt that I carried around. And now I could start a new life practicing to become the person that I wanted to be. It says in the book, and I don't know the page, we strive to be more like our Creator. So in the first four steps, or the first three steps especially, I come up with some sort of definition of what my higher power is and what he represents in my life, or she or whoever. And for me, I mean, I'm kind of anal about certain things. So I actually had a list. And I was like, okay, well, my God will be forgiving. My God will be patient. My God will be this, this, and that. And I wrote it on a piece of paper that I had in my pocket. And as I went through the day, I thought, well, Jill, if you believe that your God is this, don't you also need to reflect that in the how you interact with people, not just in the meetings, but everywhere? And it's harder to do it outside of meetings than it is to do it here. And it's not always easy, and it's a repetitive thing, but as time goes on, I'm not going to lie and say that there's a thought that goes through my head like, man, I would just like to smash that person in the face. But there's the other part of me that says, Jill, that is not the right thing to do. Just let it go. Or just go up and be nice. And so today I actually choose to do the thing that I can live with and sleep at the end of the night and not have to go make amends, because I really don't like to make amends. So it also encourages me to have integrity and to not steal, it didn't matter, you know, I realized that it didn't matter if I stole $500 or 50 cents, the feeling was exactly the same. So don't take anything, and I don't have to worry about it. Do the right thing, be the person that I want to be, have character, do those things. Do I do them 100% all the time? Probably not. I could probably list stuff that I don't do. I try my best to be the person that I've always wanted to be. So that's what I got out of integrity. And it says we demonstrate it through when we are authentic, truthful, and real. So, you know, you can't bullshit a bullshitter, and we're all bullshitters. So if you think you're bullshitting us, you're not, because we already know. It's kind of like a circle of bullshit or something. I don't know. But I'm getting off track, so with that, I'm going to pass.
Thanks, Jill.
Thanks, Jill.
And Donna was a part of our panel, but she had a family situation come up. So Diane has graciously taken on the challenge of going through Principle 6 for Donna.
Hi, I'm Donna. Oh, no. Principle 6, step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Virtue, willingness. Definition, adjective. Disposed or consenting, inclined, cheerfully consenting or ready, done, given, born, used, etc. Donna had written that we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character is Cocaine Anonymous's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime journey. This doesn't mean that we expect all our character defects to be lifted out of us. A few of them may be, but with most of them, we will have to be content with patient improvement. The words entirely ready underline the fact that we want to aim at the very best we know or can learn. I know my experience after I shared my fourth step with my sponsor, you know, and I did that fifth step work of sharing what the exact nature of my wrongs were. It was about those character defects that went behind the actions. It wasn't about so much as this of what I did. It was that I was a liar, I was a thief, I cheated, I stole, I manipulated, I resented and I had revenge, I lusted and I acted out on it. There's a whole list in the 12 and 12 when it talks about in step six that starts the paragraph, the first paragraph said this is the step that separates the men from the boys, meaning a certain attitude that I may have taken when I first got here. Just like Michael shared, I didn't come here to find God. I just wanted to know how not to pick up the pipe. One day at a time. How am I not going to pick up the pipe today? So the idea of becoming this better person wasn't even in the picture. I had the delusional thinking that if I didn't pick up the pipe, I'm a pretty good person. Only to find out by the time I shared that inventory of the fourth step that I had a lot of rationalization and justification for my behaviors, whether I picked up or not. Yes, I came in here and I wasn't quite as much of a thief. And some of these things went away right away just by not picking up. But I had this tremendous ego. And I really, after I shared that, I didn't want any character defects to reflect to you that Diane's not okay. I didn't realize it was my ego. And so that's my experience with how some things I had to have patient improvement and ask God for, you know. But I was willing. And every time I wanted to hang on to something, I had to pray for willingness. And that was really hard because I didn't want to let go of a lot of things. And it took a lot of time, a lot of years for some things. And with that, I pass.
Onto
myself again.
She's going on to Principle 7 right away, too.
This is the Diane show.
This is for a minute. Principle 7, Step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Virtue, humility. Definition, noun. The quality or condition of being humble, modest opinion, or estimate of one's own importance and rank. Again, I have a lot of quotes here of where you find the word humbly. What I recognized with that line of thinking that I just shared about being willing is the firsthand experience of why they needed step seven. Why it wasn't enough to just say, okay, let them go. Because my best efforts at trying to attain what I perceived as a better character fell short all the time. And now my character defects were just more glaring because I had shared what they were. And now I was feeling a little defeated. because a week in, 2 weeks in, a month later, I'm worse than ever. They're just right in my face. Every time I felt irritable, restless, and discontent, that knee-jerk reaction emotionally was right there, and I was a little baffled. Why aren't they removed? I want them to be gone. But, you know, I wanted to not pick up again, too, and that wasn't enough. So I needed to ask God, and they give us this lovely prayer. My Creator, on page 76, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. In hindsight, I had my own ideas about which character defects should get lifted and in what order. And God had another plan, and he still does. And I have to go back to the direction of thought process that this prayer leads me in, that it's about the things that stand in the way of my usefulness. And by being able to share the things that I continue to struggle with can put me on a better level with others, because it gains me compassion to know that I know what that feels like. I know what that feels like to still struggle in this area or that area. And I can't have unrealistic expectations of those things being gone in others, because I know how long it's taken for God to work with me, and how he's still working with me on a lot of character defects that are all about self. And as long as I'm willing to acknowledge that I've got that step three, because God has I trust this God in my life today, and I know that he's bigger than I am, that I can just say that serenity prayer and watch to see what he's going to do today. And that's what I have on that.
Thanks, Diane.
Thanks, Diane.
I'm done now.
Rick?
Rick, Dad,
Dr. Holly. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Rick. Principle 8, step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I heard my sponsor and I going through it, and I said, all of them? Anyway, virtue is love. Definition, noun, a profound, tender, passionate affection for another person, a feeling of warm personal attachment or deep affection as for a parent, child, or friend, a person whom love is felt, beloved person, sweetheart. Anyway, sweetheart. I didn't write that part. But I did write this, though. As I work these steps into my life, I start to care about others and myself. Changing and becoming a better human being, I am willing to take a hard look at repairing some of my past wrongs and relationships. I once heard this in a meeting. I'm learning to love without expectation to be loved in return. I am becoming a loving person. That is the gift. Now, I don't know about anyone else here, but before I got to recovery, I couldn't remember a time whenever I did something for someone else without expecting a reward, you know, ever, you know. And so when I worked through my four step, and what I saw that in there, you know, that I was really selfish and everything was about me. And when I first got in recovery, I didn't think I had any defects. I think I was okay. I thought I was the nicest guy out there. I always bought you a drink, or her a drink, you know? I always gave you a bomb, or here a bomb. But when I took inventory, it was really about wanting to get in your pants later. Sorry. or you had something else that you're going to give me, give me another bump later or another drink. It was always that reward or something, you know? And so in recovery, what I learned is, you know, when I got to step 8 was, I was changing already, you know?
And I cared about people. I cared about me. I knew God cared about me by then. A lot of miracles had happened in my life, you know. And this is the change that is needed. And a dope fiend like me to stay clean. It's not simply I put in the bottle down or the pipe down. I needed to change, you know. And I just share one last thing. I was recently at a business meeting for the fellowship, and this lady next to me had said something about somebody else in the meeting, and it kind of hurt the other person's feelings. And I said, you know, you're going to have to make amends. And she said, fuck that. I meant it, you know, and I kind of laughed because that was me, you know. But if you work these steps and you get to this point, you know, you change. And you can't help, it's automatic, you know. My main goal in life on this program is to make someone smile on a daily basis or laugh, whether in a grocery store or a neighbor or anybody comes across. And when that happens, I made my day. You know, if there is a heaven, I know that the comedy door is open for me. But that's how it is for me, because it was nothing funny when I got here. And this program has changed me. You know, I got 21 years of recovery. And it's because I learned to become a loving person because of the change to this program. With that, I pass.
Thanks, Rick.
Pete, addict, alcoholic.
Hey, Pete.
That's Sweet Pete.
Sweet Pete to you, everyone.
Sweetheart.
To certain people.
Sweet Pete.
May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Virtue, forgiveness. Definition, noun, the quality of being just, righteousness, equal, what's that?
I can't read.
Equal what?
Equitableness.
Yeah, there you, thank you. Or moral rightness. Rightfulness or lawfulness as of a claim or title, justness of ground or reason, the moral principle determining just conduct, conformity to this principle as manifested in conduct, just conduct, dealing or treatment, the administrating of deserved punishment or reward. And then this is what I wrote. This is a little different take on it, and then I'll get back into the other. Asking for someone's forgiveness is a way of letting someone know that I've done something, whatever it may be, to hurt them. It takes humility to let someone know that no matter what that person has done to me, that I'm sincerely sorry what I've done to them, and could you please find it in your heart to forgive me, clearing away the wreckage of my past. Now, when I think about this with asking or me forgiving somebody that's done something to me. Now, I believe in that little pamphlet there, they talk about resentment, and resentment kept me out there for a long, long time. I was raised up in a very dysfunctional family, a lot of physical abuse. I mean, a lot of brain concussions. I mean, bad stuff that shouldn't happen to kids. And I was unable and unwilling to forgive my dad for that. And I don't know if some of you have heard the definition of resentment. It's like me taking the poison and expecting the other person to die. I'm flipping around in my head at the age of 9, thinking of some way I can, literally thinking about how I can off mom and dad and get by with it at the age of 9. And then still thinking about that in my later years of how I can get back at them. And he may be, I don't know, but he may be sound asleep, not thinking anything of that. One of the biggest hurdles for me in recovery this time around was to, and not really mean it at first, but kind of, sort of, because I heard you people say that I need to pray for people that I have resentments for, and that's what I had to do. I had to pray for my dad, realize that, as they talk about in there, that he had a spiritual sickness too, a spiritual malady, just like I did, but it was in a different way, different form. And the other thing with forgiveness is, and this hit me recently, is how can I not forgive people who have done something wrong to me when I have a God who forgives me every step of the way. Every single day, if I ask for forgiveness, my God forgives me without hesitation. So who am I? Who do I think I am that somebody has done something wrong to me that I can't forgive you? Who do I think I am? Better than God? And so, does it come easy all the time for me? No. Do I still harbor some things? Yes. Just not that long ago. I mean, people in the program aren't contacting me. Well, my answer, you know, I won't contact you either then. You know, that was my answer then. And, you know, and but part of the thing is not expecting anything returned. Do that, but not expecting anything returned. But that is key for me, because as it talks about in this book, and it's back to the resentments thing, they talk about anger. I forget where it is in there, but it talks about anger is the dubious luxury of normal men. Anger will lead to resentments. Resentments will lead us to drink, and I'll put in there drug. That will lead us to die. That's how serious that is. That's why I cannot harbor any resentments, that I have to forgive people. Like I said, my higher power can forgive me. I should have no problem forgiving anyone out there. Thank you.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you. Thanks, Pete.
Michael?
Yes, Carmen. Okay, Michael. Drug addict, alcoholic. Hi. Okay, so I've got principle 10, and as I mentioned before, there's really three sets of steps, in my opinion, right? Steps 1, 2, and 3 work together as problem, solution, and accepting the problem. Steps 4 through 9 are into action, cleaning house, right? Inventory, sharing that, letting go of our grosser handicaps, asking God to help us not act out on the ones that we haven't let go of yet, made a list of all the people we hurt, and then making those amends. The next step then is making sure that we keep our house in order. And step 10 is continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Virtue is discipline, a noun. Training to act in accordance with rules, activities, exercise, or a regime that develops or improves a skill. Training, punishment inflicted by way of correction and training, the rigor or training, effective experience, adversity, behavior in accordance with rules of conduct, behavior and order maintained by training and control. This was not me when I was out there, I'll tell you that. None of that was out there. But now I've gotten through this, and I've got my house in order, and we need to keep it cleaned up. And in step 10, Kelly did a beautiful job describing this last night about how important it is to watch. And I think that's the key in step 10, is to watch and be continually aware of what is coming out of me, what is going on in my mind, and what is coming out when I talk to other people, my body language. I can speak very loudly without saying a word, right? And all of those things I need to be aware of. And when I'm wrong, and I am wrong a lot, I need to turn right around and admit that. And if I do that, then I don't have to go through that whole process of steps 4 through 9 again. If I miss this piece, okay, then I've got something out there that's going to be out in inventory, and I'm going to need to find that. If I don't find that, it's going to build a resentment and start this whole chain reaction going again. So step 10 is what keeps me out of trouble, and the discipline part is doing it. It's the truly being aware, because it's really easy for me to be pissed off and to just say, well, screw this time, okay? And I do that, right? I was going to relate something I probably should. So it's God also that is the great force that keeps me doing this. If I don't do this, I'm going to end up going back out there. That's again step back all the way back to step 1.
once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting, right? And being on a God footing is the only way, is the only way that I can keep that whole chain reaction from going. And I can't be close to God if I've got those resentments. Mm-hmm. And this keeps them from happening again. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks. Jill?
Okay, Principle 11, Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Virtue is spiritual awareness. Definition: spiritual, adjective of pertaining to or consisting of spirit. Incorporeal, or pertaining to the spirit of should, as distinguished from the physical nature. Awareness, noun, the state of condition of being aware, having knowledge, consciousness, spiritual awareness, being awake to the non-physical part of being. Well, that makes it very confusing. Anyways. Spiritual awareness. The understanding that a life not filled with spiritual awareness means a life filled with ego. Working towards God's will for me requires conscious prayer and action towards towards spiritual principles. Sorry, my glasses must be dirty. My past has demonstrated without question that I am not to be left in charge. Seeking spiritual guidance in every situation gives me a chance to pause before making decisions, think before speaking or acting. I need to have spiritual direction in my conscious thoughts throughout the day. Working step 11 practices this. So, spiritual awareness and I mean, kind of what Michael said, that I need to constantly be aware of what I'm doing and what I'm saying and what I'm thinking, and I was liking it to, if I'm sitting here thinking about all the stuff I have to do tomorrow, then I'm not consciously aware of anything that anybody else is saying. In order to be consciously aware, I need to oftentimes practice looking directly at the person because I'm easily distracted. So if I am consciously looking at you and listening to what you're saying and not judging it or going back and forth in my mind that, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, man, you know, his voice is annoying, blah, 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 blah. If I can quiet my mind enough to sit and listen to people, then I am conscious of what's going on with that person and what they're saying. And a lot of times I have to do that with my spirituality and the God that's going in my life, because if I'm constantly thinking about all the other things, I can't be conscious of the spirit that's in my life. It's kind of hard to explain, but I mean, I get easily, I don't know what happened, but apparently I can't remember anything. So, and it's because I have too many things that I'm trying to keep track of, and I realize that there's only a maximum amount of storage capacity. And once you reach a certain age, apparently something has to go. And I don't understand why it can't be stuff when you're little, because you don't really need that anymore. But the important stuff is now. You know, like, oh, they tried to have an appointment, and it's at this time, whatever. But, you know, I can remember vacations from when I was 12. I don't know if that's important for everyday life today, but nonetheless, it's there. So it's knowing these things and then adapting to my life and changing those things. And I have to take the time to pray. And I remember I mentioned earlier that even though I may be thinking these things in my head, I don't actually follow through on 80-90% of them, because I'm able to take that pause that I think was mentioned in a thing earlier, take that pause and consciously be aware and ask God for help at that moment to not tell you what I really think, you know, because it's not worth hurting someone else's feelings because I disagree with you or whatever it is. So it's consciously being aware of that. Do I do a good job at this? Absolutely not. Because I can read a meditation in the morning, read through it, think about it, do a little prayer, grab my crap, I'm out the door, and the next thing I know, I'm yelling at somebody in the car or whatever. I mean, it totally went out there, and I can't tell you what I read. So then I got it on my phone, because I was like, hey, then I can read it throughout the day, but then I forget to do that. But nonetheless, the point is that it's there if I ever remember to actually utilize it. But it's consciously keeping that with me throughout the day, and what are my motives and what am I doing? Being kind to people. You know, like Rick said, you know, being aware of the people around me and being kind, and not being full of myself, because I'm full of myself a lot, and it's actually training and discipline not to think about Jill all the time, because I am just that awesome, actually. But so I don't. This is. It takes practice. It takes conscious practice, and it takes conscious thought, and to take those moments and to really see my God and my spirit stuff all in my life throughout the day. So with that, I'm going to pass to Donna.
Thanks. And this time, beautiful Donna will be played by Sweet Pete.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you, Jill.
You're welcome.
Principle.
Hi, Donna.
Thank you. Principle 12, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Virtue, service, definition, noun, an act of helpful activity, help, aid. And then Donna wrote, the joy of living is the theme of the 12th step, and action is its key word. Here we turn outward toward our fellow addicts who are still in distress. Here we experience the kind of giving that asks no rewards. Here we begin to practice all 12 steps of the program in our daily lives so that we and those around us may find emotional sobriety. When the 12th step is seen in its full implication, it's really talking about the kind of love that has no price tag on it. I cannot tell you guys what a vital role this has played in my recovery this time around. I used to do stuff, service work, not because I cared about people, but so the spotlight of Cocaine Anonymous could be on my bald head. Look at Pete, look at what he's doing. He's saving mankind, breaking my arm, practically breaking myself or patting myself on the back, and look at what a good guy I am. And then couldn't wait to get out of wherever I was carrying a message and go home and carrying on with my life. In working with others, on the first page it says, nothing will ensure immunity from alcoholism as intensive work with other alcoholics. Something to the effect, when all other things fail, that will carry me through. Now that's not an exact quote, but it's kind of on what they're talking about in there. And I found that this time, no matter what's going on in my life, when I've been going into a facility for quite a few years now, whatever is going on in my life is gone. It's gone. I'm not concerned about that. I'm carrying that message to these people that need some kind of hope. The other thing with this, and I forget where that is in the book, but somebody, I think it was asked Bill, because he was working with a lot of alcoholics, and they said, so how many of them are doing good? And I believe he said something to the effect, and I don't know if it was not one or just a couple, but something to that effect. But he said, you know what? I'm staying sober. That's that's the main reason I go. I hope I plant a seed in there. I hope a light bulb goes on. I hope that somebody gets something that I say when I go there. But when I walk out, I don't walk out of there anymore. I float out of that facility now, because that's helped me. And we understand one another. We understand what's going on. We relate. When they see me walk into that facility, some of these guys look at me like, what is dude going to tell me about where I've been? They look at me like, who's this little guy coming in like this talking what? And I've heard him mumble under their breath. And then I start going, and then I see the eyes kind of light up a little bit, and they go, okay,
okay. And then somebody will raise their hand and go, dude, yeah, I'm glad you came in. I understood. Hopefully you said something's going to help me someday. So we understand that. My mom wants me to stay clean and sober, but she doesn't understand the mental obsession, the physical allergy, the phenomenon of craving. My mom can have a glass of wine on her birthday and not have another glass of wine till her next birthday. Give me a glass of wine and Katie bar the doors. You know, so that's what this is all about. It's carrying this message. And the last thing I want to say, if and especially for newcomers in here, the thing that I heard, the common theme in this whole thing is God. And for me, the last 3 years has been a revelation for me, because the whole premise of this book is to find God. And it says in there, we'll solve all my problems. Not just my drug and alcohol problems, but all my problems it's going to solve. And thank goodness for those doctors that were treating the early alcoholics back in the 20s and the 30s, in the doctor's opinion, when they were able to say and drop their egos, and because I work with doctors, some of them think they are God, some of them think they walk on water. It says to show something to the effect that, oh, in nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they were to succeed. Meaning there had to be some kind of outside force, some kind of divine intervention, whatever you call it, but they even realized that there, that everything humanly possible was not the answer to that. There had to be something outside of that. So I'm telling you guys, I mean, I was in and out of this thing for 18 years before I got 1 year. One of the reasons why I was in and out, because I tried to customize this thing. I'll do this and this, and I'm sorry, I'm off the loop here. This step and this step, and I'll work this step, and this step out of your little book. Those other steps that you guys are working out of your book that are keeping you clean and sober, I'll work them the way I want to work them, and you leave me alone. The other reason why, and this is the main reason why I was in and out for 18 years, is because I handle it. I'm not going to listen to you who tells me, and I can see you, and now you want me to believe in something that I don't see? Are you crazy? You gotta be nuts. And where was this God looking out for me, my brother, and my sister? Where was your God? So don't tell me about your God. So newcomers in here, if you have coming in like that, please just have the door open a little bit of a crack like that. That's all you need. It doesn't tell you you have to completely define, have a specific definition, or know completely what your God is about. Just believe that I'm not the center of the universe. The world does not revolve around me. That there is, as somebody that I know says, that something out, somebody out there bigger and badder than me. I'll pass with that. Thank you. Sorry.
Thanks, Donna.
At this time, we're going to open up the floor for comments, questions that maybe the panel can answer. Anybody like to go?
You guys did a really good job. It was very thorough. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, then those, if there's no other comments or questions, then we're going to close. For those of you who'd like to, we're going to get in a circle and do the serenity prayer.
God, my underwear's stuck again.
Do you mind? Leave your chair sitting down. The hell with the rest of us. We're going to get yawning.
That was when Carmen was talking.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for sharing.